Okay, is everybody back?
Hey, Emily's back.
Okay, great. Okay, so we'll start by asking if there are any announcements. Emily, why don't you, for the recording, talk about what you did at AAAF?
Sure. So this is Emily Cloyd. We had from the U.S. Global Change Research Program. So we had a booth during Family Science Days. It's the first time that we have done that. But since it was here in D.C., we wanted to take advantage of it. So Frank Niepold and his colleague Bart joined us from NOAA. We also had a number of folks from NASA that joined us. And they all brought exciting, fun activities, hands-on things about sea level rise, about the GLOBE program. NASA brought Dynamic Planet and had lots of displays that people could see on a big interactive globe. And then we also had some hands-on coloring and graph reading activities based on materials from the National Climate Assessment. So. Overall, I think Jeannie at AAAF said they had over 3,000 people that came through, not counting people who came on Saturday, loved it so much, and came back on Sunday.
So, great.
It was fun.
That's actually close to the entire attendance of the meeting. The entire attendance of the meeting was 4,000, and one quarter of them were press. So it's a very interesting balance of people there.
Yeah.
Just to follow on, Frank and I organized and participated in a symposium at AAAS focused on climate literacy and collective impact. And it was a really interesting session. We provided some of the feedback we've gotten from the surveys that we did in the fall around collective impact and climate literacy from the Clean Network and beyond the Clean Network. And then we had Carrie McDougall talk about the federal agency's efforts to coordinate efforts and have and enable a larger collective impact around the federally funded climate change education activities. And then we had Nicole Ardwin from ChangeScale in San Francisco give a talk about their successful collective impact effort, which is a regional scale, but they've also done some research around how they've implemented it. So it was really quite interesting. The one other piece that I'd like to make people aware of, because we have talked about collective impact on this call a few times, and we've talked about those five elements of collective impact. And the people who put forward this model have now come out with a new paper that has added a sixth element that's very interesting, and we might want to discuss at some point around equity, and that equity needs to be an integral component for a successful collective impact piece. So I just wanted to put that out there. Frank, did you have anything to add about our session?
Yeah, sure. I think it was a very well attended session. But one of the most interesting things I found was that when I asked, had anybody else known about the collective impact model, and there wasn't a single hand in the room. Did you calculate how many people were in the room, Tamara? It was over 40 people.
I estimated that there were at least a little over 30. But I only counted once, so people came and go a bit. But it was a nice sized room, and we had pretty good attendance.
So I think the point though is that there were a lot of people interested that were new to this. We've never had a session like this at AAAS, and on top of that, they were new to the concept, and I think resonated with it very well. So I think the growing community understanding of what we're talking about is definitely occurring. We had some rich follow-up side conversations as well.
Right. Okay, thanks. Are there any other announcements of ongoing activities? Okay, well then if not, we'll move on to our
Tamara,
presentation.
I have a quick question, and I don't know if there are any scientists on the call today.
Go ahead.
There's a really nice article this last week in our local paper here in Boulder, Colorado, from one of the NCAR scientists who explains in very layman-like terms, I felt, the problem that exists with people's perception of the 1 degree annual average temperature increase based on the 2015 records, but the other half a degree that's pent up, that's on its way, and that people aren't acknowledging the residual, or whatever the proper adjective is, warming that already is coming down the pipeline. And I'm wondering if there are other people on the call that have used those, that have actually seen that, whether it's gone off, out on the wire services, one or the other. And
this is Frank. I can speak to this at some length, if that's okay.
There are two things that I want to ask about. One is whether it's gone out on the wire services or whether this is just local news kind of thing, because UCAR is right here. And also the popular literature that explains this and other possible sources.
I just want to interject really quick. This is Terry Eastburn, and the scientist that was in that article is Jerry Neal.
Yeah.
He's a well-known senior scientist.
Right.
So if people are interested in talking to him about the article or about his research, I'm certainly happy to try to arrange something with Jerry.
Okay, could you send a link to the article out so that
I'd be happy to do that. And
okay.
If there's no other popular literature out about this, that's what I'm really trying to determine.
So, I mean, but I don't know about popular. I mean, it's a hard thing to quantify.
Yeah, I know there's popular scientific literature, but it's the public I'm interested in.
Well, so this is where this comes in to the recent work in the scientific field and the public field is the language in the Paris Agreement, where we committed to 2 degrees warming with as close to, I can't remember the exact wording, the latest 1.5 degrees was put forth by the small Asian nations. When that came into the literature, everybody kind of in the scientific field was really struggling because we kind of are already at 1.5.
Right, and that's what Jerry's trying to point out in this article.
Right, and so there's an aspirational public, you know, and then there's the scientific space, and there's a lot of tension between those two. So I think that conversation comes from the Paris Agreement, raising that back up, because the scientific community is really struggling how to manage credibly that target when we're already, with everything that's already committed in the system, at 1.5 at some level.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So you're saying there's not a lot of popular literature that makes this point. Is that correct, Frank?
I mean, from my understanding, that is correct, because the challenge just came in December because of that ramp up target. So but I don't think there's much discussion on that, except for maybe a lot of the people talking about the 350 parts per million target that 350.org and Jim Hansen have been talking about,
mm-hmm.
which is you know 50 parts per million lower than where we are currently.
But okay, well, let me send out the link, and if any of you have comments about the way it's stated in this article, I just want to make sure that before I pass this on to thousands of people, that you all think it states the case as well as my naive brain thinks it states it.
I just want to add that you'll see in the article, too, that Kevin Trenberth mentions that it's actually worse than Jerry mentioned, so... it's an interesting point just about the inertia in the system. So, and with the Supreme Court ruling last week in regards to the clean power plants, this is really timely.
Yes.
Okay, well, thanks a lot. And yes, please share the link. And if people want to have a more extended discussion about it, we can schedule that during one of our informal, one of our sessions in which we don't have something else scheduled. Okay?
March 15th is our earliest right now.
Okay, so we'll move on to our presentation for today. We have Emily Cloyd, who is the Engagement and Outreach Lead for the USGCRP National Coordination Office for the National Climate Assessment. And she's going to be, we've had her speak before about the National Climate Assessment and thought it would be good time for a follow-up to talk about the Sustained National Climate Assessment Update. And so everybody should have the slides. So Emily, I'll turn it over to you, and just remember, try to remember to refer to your slide numbers as you go along so that people who come in late can catch up.
All right. Thanks, Tamara, and thank you for the invitation to come speak with Clean again. So the on slide number one, you'll see my contact information. In case you have follow-up questions to this, please don't hesitate to email me. I'll go ahead to slide number two. What I'm going to talk about today first are some of the topical reports that we have recently had come out or will soon be coming out. And then I'll talk a little bit more about the larger process leading to the synthesis reports that come out every 4 years. So first off, I wanted to point out we had a topical report on climate change, global food security, and the U.S. food system that came out December 2nd during COP21. So this report and all of the supporting materials are available from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. And if you click through on that link, you'll see there are additional materials, video, report and brief, executive summary, some fact sheets, and so forth that give a shorter view of this report. But overall, the report is found that climate change is likely to diminish continued progress on food security by disrupting production, limiting the availability of food, possibly leading to price increases, interruptions to transportation of food to different places, and diminished food safety, among other causes. And so it's really the way that climate change can and will interact with the food safety and the food delivery system is something very important to consider, because changes at any point in that food growing, delivery, access, and consumption can be affected by climate change. So that report is out, and I encourage you to take a look at it. On the next slide, slide three, we will have coming out this spring an assessment on climate and health. So this is, again, one of the topical reports that dives into greater detail on a number of topics related to the National Climate Assessment. So this report was developed to enhance understanding and inform decisions about the growing threat of climate change to health and well-being of the United States residents. And it is being written by a team of about 100 experts from 7 federal agencies, and also includes authors from academia, from NGOs, and other places, including public health officials, planners, decision makers, other stakeholders. And it's based on a large body of peer-reviewed research. The report was put out for public comment last year. It was also reviewed by the National Academies of Sciences and by the agencies that make up the U.S. Global Change Research Program. Slide four, as I said, we expect to release this report this spring. And the main products that we anticipate having are a downloadable printable PDF of the report, an executive summary that will be a shorter similar to the overview that we had for the National Climate Assessment. And then, like the National Climate Assessment, an interactive website that will allow users to explore the report, explore the graphics, and dive more deeply into the background literature and data used in the report. And some additional products that are possibly under development include some additional interactive figures and infographics, fact sheets that will speak to various populations of concern, slides like we did with the National Climate Assessment, where if you go to our download site, you'll see there are slide decks available for each of the chapters. We are also considering how we can develop similar slide decks for this report, and then social media messages. And then we'll also have a number of outreach activities at places like professional conferences, so the American Public Health Association, for example, webinars, other presentations. And for these supplementary products and for this outreach, we're really trying to figure out how we can work through NCANET and with other collaborators to extend the reach of this report, both through direct outreach and through additional products that might be developed for specialized audiences. So with the National Climate Assessment, I know that CLEAN and other partners developed the educational resources, the learning pathways that helped explore the National Climate Assessment. So this would be another opportunity for that sort of collaboration, focusing more
Emily,
on public health.
Can I ask a quick question here? Are these reports going to be cross-linked with the National Climate Assessment website such that where the National Climate Assessment talks about impacts on health, people can find this report?
I think on globalchange.gov, where we have the topic on health, it would link to both of these reports, but because the third National Climate Assessment came out before this report, you wouldn't necessarily find links from the 2014 report to this one, which will come out in 2016. But this report would link back to information available from the 2014 report.
I see. Okay.
But I think that's a good question, is how do we sort of make information from the third assessment look forward to new things that have been developed. So I think that's something that we're trying to do through the globalchange.gov website, where we have the pages on different topics like health, adaptation, and so forth. So if we go to slide 5, I've included some information about the health communications affinity group that has begun meeting from NCANET, and I think this would be a place where people from CLEAN who are interested in exploring how to do some of that collaboration on outreach, education, communication around the health report, this would be a good place to find collaborators, since we are meeting approximately every 2 weeks until the report release. So this group first met last week on the 10th and started to think about what NCANET collaborators might want to do around the release of the health reports. And so we started to talk about the sorts of products or events that might be most useful for communicating with stakeholders, thinking about what those organizations are already doing that might connect back to the health report. And so if folks on this call are interested in joining that group, I invite you to join us next week on February 24th for that affinity group meeting. That will be at 1 p.m. Eastern, and as I said, probably every 2 weeks until the report release, which we're hoping will be in early April. If you do want to be a part of that group, you can contact Mark Shimamoto and get added to the list, or you can contact me and I'll make sure you get on the list. I think if there is interest in developing some educational materials or activities related to the health report, I think that's something that certainly we're interested in collaborating with folks on, and I think there are other folks who are a part of the health communications affinity group call who would also be interested in that. On slide six, we just last Friday had a Federal Register notice come out asking for input on the second state of the carbon cycle report. In that Federal Register notice, we announced a number of opportunities for input. Most immediately, comments on the draft prospectus for that State of the Carbon Cycle report, and nominations of potential technical contributors to that report. So that would be people who would serve as authors on the second State of the Carbon Cycle report. So I encourage you to take a look at the draft prospectus, and if you or your colleagues would be interested in serving as technical contributors to the report, please submit your comments and nominate people who you think would be good contributors to the report. We had a public forum at the beginning of the month focusing on the second state of the carbon cycle report that provided an opportunity for individual input on some of the proposed themes of the report. And so you can visit that link and get a little bit more information about that public forum. Obviously, it's already over, but it was leading to this Federal Register notice asking for comments. There are also a couple of science workshops scheduled for this spring. Information about the public forum and the science workshops is available from carboncyclescience.us on the web and from U.S. Carbon Program on Twitter. If you have more questions about the carbon cycle report, again, you can get in touch with me, and then I can put you in touch with Yami Shrestha, who is the director of the U.S. Carbon Cycle Science Program. Slide 7 lists a few other activities that are underway. As I think many of you are aware, over the summer we solicited nominations for the Sustained National Climate Assessment Federal Advisory Committee. That advisory committee is being put together by NOAA, and they are working on sorting through those nominations and selecting committee members. And so I don't have specific details on the timeline for that, but they will be contacting all of the folks who were nominated once they have their decision made to make invitations and to let folks know if they were not selected. And so we're hoping that that federal advisory committee will begin meeting this spring, and that advisory committee will focus primarily on providing advice on communication and engagement for the National Climate Assessment. We also have a special report on physical climate science that is underway. So that report will be similar to the Our Changing Climate chapter of the 2014 National Climate Assessment. The reason that we have it split off as a special report here is so that we can provide that physical climate science report a little bit earlier and have that available for folks, both the authors of the National Climate Assessment and for others who would like to use that report as they develop products related to the assessment.
Hey, Emily?
Yes, Frank.
The conversation we had earlier about the Boulder article, do you think some of the issues that were being discussed there, especially about that change target language in the Paris Agreement, do you think that that would be an input into some of the work? Because the National Climate Assessment has that editorial plain language for the nation aspect.
Right.
I mean, is that something that could you know, as an input into their deliberations as to what would be in there. Is that an appropriate thing to transfer?
Yes.
Okay. I can do that with Wayne in my office.
Okay.
To see if that makes sense for them. Great. Thank you.
Yeah. I also wanted to point out we have an update to the U.S. Global Change Research Program strategic plan that will be coming out later this year. We had a public comment period on that that closed on January 30th. But if folks did not get a chance to contribute during that public comment period, but you do want to take a look at the draft update, please get in touch with me and I can provide you with a PDF of that draft product. So this update is basically the U.S. Global Change Research Program has a decadal strategic plan that came out in 2012 with four pillars or goals. The fourth goal for USGCRP is communicate and educate. And so I think that one is of a lot of interest to CLEAN. This update, which we are required to do every 3 years, basically looks at progress on our goals and adjustments, focus areas for the future. And so if folks are interested in looking at the whole update or in the update specifically on goal four, communicate and educate, just let me know and I can send you a copy of the draft. Also coming soon, we have a special issue of climatic change that will focus on the process used in the third national climate assessment. A number of, actually all of those articles I think are now available online from the climatic change website. And then the special issue will come out later this year. And it focuses on all aspects of the national climate assessment process, from actually setting up the assessment through putting together the various chapters, the Federal Advisory Committee, and doing things like communication and engagement around the assessment. And then
so
some of our
Emily,
ongoing...
Emily, what's the purpose of this? Is this really just to document it, or is it to identify what really was effective and what maybe need to be considered for the next one?
So it's a little bit of both. For the most part, these are internal evaluations, so they've been written primarily by people who are participants in the third national climate assessment. In some cases, there are some outside authors, but I would say this is primarily an internal evaluation of the process. So documenting what happened and reflecting on lessons learned and suggestions for the future. There is also an exterior evaluation of the NCA3 process that is underway now.
So if this was intended as an internal reflection, why are they publishing it?
Well, internal as in the people who did this are internal to the process.
Mm, I see, okay.
So not internal like it is meant to only be shared internally, but internal in that we realize that we are biased because we were participants in the process.
Mm-hmm, okay.
So that's basically the bones of my update there. My last slide is just, again, my contact info so that if folks want to follow up after this call, you can get in touch with me. So.
Okay, well,
Emily,
we can go to questions.
Thank you. Go ahead, Frank.
One question for you, Emily, that shows up in some of the members of the network. Some of the conversation, I mean, obviously the CLEAN Network has been using the National Climate Assessment extensively in a lot of different ways. But one thing that we might want to consider as we're moving into the production of the next assessment is some of the feedback from practitioners out there in our community about the way the products were generated. And I'm thinking specifically in this case, Jim Bray. But not only Jim Bray, because a lot of us who were involved in learning pathways part of why those were made was because there were some navigational aspects of the assessment that were really quite challenging for audiences. And some of that feedback should probably be, while it's fresh in people's mind, captured in some way to be given to the next team that is going to be building the products themselves. So I'll give you one very concrete example just to illustrate what I'm saying. Ira Geer, a very senior science education person at AMS, found the website to be really challenging for higher education and education use. It was very cut and segmented, as opposed to when he finally found the PDF of the entire National Climate Assessment, he was like, that was so much more useful in a linear form than the way the website, I think, I can't remember the name of the group that made that, but they really found that to be challenging. And that's a design piece that got in the way of the application and use of it. Is there value in us kind of having a focused conversation with our community for those who've been really deeply using it, for you and the people in the office who are involved in that?
Yeah, I think that would be very helpful, because there are many different levels of trying to access and use the assessment. And so I think a lot of folks, they get there, they see a bright, shiny website, that there's lots of clicks and ability to sort of jump from here to there, and people really like it. And so that was a lot of the early feedback we got, was like, wow, awesome website. But I think what you've brought up are really valid points about making sure that we balance that with people who are trying to do a deeper dive into the material.
Right. And does anybody else on the call have any, were any of you guys deep users of this product and can resonate with that? Just so it's not just me bringing up one person. I mean, I heard it from other people, but I don't have any.
This is Jim Bray. Yeah, I think we would love to have that conversation. I think, we've pursued that website very diligently, and I think there are some people that really enjoyed the way it was set up. For our purposes, we try to, approach things in a linear fashion, and that's what kind of through Ira. But I think, yes, we would be very, very happy to share our experience, and that experience has continued because we have continued to use NCA3 extensively in our investigations that we provide both the undergraduate people that take our courses, as well as the teachers that take our professional development courses.
Thank you, Jim. I didn't even know you were on the call.
This is Kristen with Climate Generation. I would kind of piggyback on that. We've used it a lot in professional development workshops with teachers, but always with a tool to help them explore it, because initially when we started using it, it was just too overwhelming, and so we use a scavenger mm-hmm. hunt, and we use sort of an outline piece to help them access it. And then our newest curriculum, we used it as the backbone for all the charts and figures that are in it, but once again, extracting information and putting it more into a digestible form for teachers, and then kind of telling them where they needed to go to get certain things.
Yeah, and I just want to point out how useful and valuable the learning pathways are that you all worked on for the assessment. They are really great tools that we can now point to when we have educators say, well, what can I do with this assessment, and what is there that might be useful for my middle school or my high school students? And so those are questions I get a lot, especially when I'm out doing things like Family Science Days. So you already knew how great you all are, but I'm telling you again.
Well, yes, thank you. And I sort of heard you say that you might want to do something similar with that health report. So if there is some kind of coordination that would help with that, let us know, and we can see if we can get rallied together to help.
Yeah, well, and I think it's, I mean, I think it's something for this group to think about is, would that sort of a product be useful? The learning pathways for NCA3 are primarily organized around regions. The health report, because it's a topical report, will focus entirely on health, and then under that, all sorts of different topics running from food safety, water safety, to vector-borne disease and mental health. So,
well, that's why I suggested that if you move from the regional pieces of the NCA3, where
yeah.
it talks about health implications, then pointing to the approach. So it does require you to kind of go back to that and to identify the places in this new report that might help
right.
build on that. That's where you can make the connection between regional to specific health issues.
Right.
Well, there was another aspect, and I think the community just ran out of energy at the time, was we kind of knew when we did the regional approach that there was a sectoral potential, but we just never did it. And I think that just, you know, because we only had so much time and we'd done what we had done, and it took a lot of work. But I don't think there's anything precluding what we did with regional to also do sectoral. The same strategy, but just a different way of cross-cutting the information. And health is one of those sectoral approaches as opposed to, you know, agriculture or energy or you name it.
The other
thing you
can think about, I mean, I don't know how fine-grained it's broken down, but if there are specific health issues, you could focus learning pathways around those.
You know,
yeah,
go ahead.
So just really quickly, the topics that will be covered, so the chapters of the report, are temperature-related death and illness, air quality, extreme events, vector-borne disease, water-related illness, food safety, mental health and well-being, and populations of concern.
Yeah, I just wanted to add that I think, you know, there has been a lot covered on health, and it's great that it's being, you know, put out in this report. But the mental health aspect, I don't think, is very well covered. It'll be really interesting to see that. I think that will interest a lot of people.
I do. I'm excited about this also, because I do think it helps address, I know we brought it up earlier, actually, the equity lens when we're talking about climate change more so than any of the other sectors. And it ties into the Clean Power Plan and Paris Agreement as well, when we're getting into the clean air part. So that's, I think, from a timely perspective, it's and educationally a great opportunity too.
I agree with all these points that are being made, and I just have to circle back, Emily, to the question of what can be done either before the release or immediately after the release to make all this more digestible. I hear you're praising the work that Kristen and her colleagues are doing up in Minnesota, but I'm saying to myself, so does that need to be duplicated around the country, or is there some role that you all can take leading this national effort to make it more digestible to all of us by, I don't know whether it's subcontracting with Climate Gen or doing something internally there, but rather than putting out a product that you know needs to be further worked on to make it more digestible, can you do that? And
well,
I hear what
I think,
Frank
well,
always says about the constraint on
resources.
I did
not take care
I understand
that. Well, so a couple of things. I think first, the regional work was done by people across the country, so it wasn't just Climate Generation.
Yeah, but as somebody just pointed out, the health thing is more cross-cutting, right?
Yeah, with excellent.
It is absolutely cross-cutting, but I think that there's
right.
two ways of looking at it. One is the product, and the other one is helping people use the products that are on the ground at a more regional scale, which is what Climate Generation, but then others are doing the same thing in other places. And I think that, you know, like the Clio Institute is clearly working down in South Florida.
In Florida, yeah.
You know, and
yeah.
other organizations are deeply involved in different regions. But there are a lot of spots out there where there's just no good regional leader like Climate Generation or Clio or the Wild Center or, you know, Scott Carley. I imagine there's some great people working out in the Pacific Northwest. But
yep.
there's it's kind of a hard building up those regional champions. And we've done that over the years, and some come and go. But this, I think that's the way that moves forward.
So you don't see investing at a national level to make it more accessible to all of us?
Absolutely, I see that. How we find the, I mean, this is something that showed up in the conversations at AAAS, again, about the backbone, you know, vision that Tamara's been building with us. There's a network of networks, and there's a value of connecting networks, and then there's the value of what a network node does. We have that vision, but, I mean, what we've been really struggling with is finding the resources to build out that, because right now we're doing it pro bono, and that's,
yep,
that's
like
just
all
not
of us scalable. Are.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
right.
and that's the missing juice here.
I just think the investment on something as cross-cutting as health, the investment is just more wisely made at the national level to make it accessible to all regions.
Well, so it's not so much that the report isn't accessible, but for, I think, what the value of what happened with NCA3 was there were already materials in the Clean Library, and so a lot of it was linking what was in the regional chapters to materials available in the Clean Library. And then there was additional work that happened to bring in other materials either from the NCA3 website or other sources that were related to the information in the assessment.
This is Scott Carley. I want to build on that and also go back to something that Frank quite rightly talked about, which is that in the NCA3 report, there were sectoral chapters. And when we were doing the learning pathways, we certainly made the choice to go ahead and just look at the regions just simply because of time. I actually think it would be very interesting to simply build on that, essentially do the same thing we did for regions and do it for health. The other, and actually the other sectors too, would be very helpful too if we were able to get there. The other piece of that is something that someone else alluded to, and that is if we were able to do that, then we could link into these newer reports. And so the education, if I call it the learning pathways, is something that we could be updating as new material comes in and make those linkages, so that the National Climate Assessment 3, that website stays static, but we're actually doing essentially a commentary on that and its uses for the education in the broadest sense.
I can see that being quite useful to do, and that may be a way in which we can link health issues, the special report, into educational materials. Well, I can tell you I don't think we'll find a whole lot in the Queen Collection around human health.
Well, but if there are gaps in the collection, we have other ways of dealing with that.
Yeah, exactly. As we did even when we were looking at the regional stuff and the ocean and coast stuff.
This is already one of the Midwest key messages is public health risks. I'm familiar with the Midwest, so I'm not sure about the others. So some of this was broken out for some regions, I know.
But, I mean, as somebody who controls the web pages for the learning pathways, if we have, you know, energy in the community to add a health sector pathway, we have the templates, we have the strategies, we have probably the people, you know, whether if we want to do that, that's I fully support that.
That would be the way to do it.
And that would be the first sectoral strategy as opposed to the first, you know, like building. I think that's better at a sectoral approach as opposed to a regional approach. Because it needs to be stand out across the country, which is what's being called for.
Yeah,
so, Emily, if we wanted to try to see if we had some critical mass to do this, can you provide a two-sentence overview of each area, each topic that's addressed in the report so that we can see if we can identify people that might be willing to contribute to creating such learning pathways, sort of trying to identify people before the report's actually released?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can do that. I'll work with our health team to do that, but yes, we can do that.
Right. I think that would be helpful.
Yeah.
Also, Emily, I think John Balbus would be incredibly supportive of this idea, given what he did down in AMS recently.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, I wanted to mention, too, Frank, you may remember this also, is that John also did a webinar for NOAA Climate Stewards, and I'm sure that's recorded, and that might be worthwhile to put, you know, out there for people to use.
Absolutely. John has been very interested in the intersection of education and climate and health for quite some time, and I think this gives us a way to move some of that forward and more.
What's his last name, John? What?
Balbus. B-A-L-B-U-S.
And he's at the National Institute for Environmental Health.
Yep.
Oh, okay.
He's also the USGCRP principal.
I can send out the link to that webinar if you'd like me to.
That would be great.
I also wanted to mention really quickly that when Emily talked about food security, I actually produced that video that's on the USDA, and so if anyone wants to use it or embed it somewhere, please feel free.
Okay.
Can you send out the link?
Yeah, I'll send it out on the Clean Network then. It's in her PowerPoint, the link where you can find it, but I'm happy to do that.
Okay, that'd be great.
This is Jason Donner from the University of Calgary.
Go ahead.
If you are going to have things that are free to share, you might want to explicitly state what kind of Creative Commons license you're using, because commercial use, non-commercial use, and so forth is an important distinction and should be labeled clearly with the resources.
It is labeled. It's on YouTube, and the that is actually on there.
Because I was looking through the globalchange.gov resources while the call was going on, because I hadn't heard of that before. And it would be nice if the resources could actually be filtered by usage rights.
So which resources are you looking at?
We, We can take this offline if this isn't of interest to everybody.
Okay.
But where it says browse, find, resource data, and multimedia?
Yeah.
You have to actually look along the bottom. Like I was, your graphics, for example, you have to actually look on a per image basis with the help.
Right.
It would be able to filter your search. And it would also be helpful if the Creative Commons license standards were used, because just this is free to be used is actually really ambiguous, because it could mean a number of different things, like free to be used for commercial purposes, free to be used for non-commercial purposes, with modification, without modification.
So I can see if that's possible.
We could have a longer conversation about this offline. I don't want to drag everything around.
Right. I mean, I think the statement that's on there, that if it's credited to GCRP or another federal agency, it's free to use with credit. It's free to use. It's the government does not have a copyright. So, but yes, if you get in touch with me, we can follow that down a little bit further, and I can give that to the folks on our team who actually deal more with putting up those notes,
yeah,
and actually know what all those different things are with Creative Commons.
Okay. I'll send you an email. Thanks.
Yes.
Okay. Are there any other questions for Emily or comments?
This is Pat Harcourt from Made Clear, and thank you, Emily, for a great presentation and a great discussion. And I just want to agree with what Frank was saying earlier, that maybe a better menu or a better flow for the website would be helpful for teachers. The USGCRP kindly provided hard copies of the National Climate Assessment to the teachers that we work with, and they greatly appreciate those, particularly because the hard copies provide a kind of a directory that's easier for them to for their students to use to find the images they want. Then they can go online and get high resolution and more information and so on. But it's very, very helpful to have multiple forms of the information. So I just wanted to put a plug in to continue to make it possible to have multiple access, multiple lines of access to the information. Thank you.
Yes.
Great idea.
Have you looked into just doing like a lesson plan kind of thing? Because when I work with teachers, that's what they always want. They want me to hand them something that they can just walk into their classroom and use.
Mm-hmm. Well, the learning pathways we created is sort of a not quite that, but close.
Yeah.
Okay.
Did somebody else have a comment?
Yeah, this is Pat again, and I was just going to say that one of the things that we're really trying to promote is using real data in education, and I think the NCA provides irresistible data. It's visually presented, and then the students can dig in and get to the more quantitative side. So it's not just lesson plans, but actually real data in a visually engaging form.
Another idea that we talked about when we were working on the learning pathways concept was that these are more like the raw materials you would assemble into a unit. And there are lesson activities already in there, but it's kind of a combining of lessons and videos and scientific resources together to make more of a unit structure than an individual lesson, per se. That was the
right,
idea.
The learning pathways include reviewed activities, but the activities were created before the National Climate Assessment was created, so that they don't specifically address it, but they point that these are supportive resources for understanding the material in the National Climate Assessment.
Okay, I'm in a different country. I'm in Canada, And we've just recently kicked out our climate change denying government. Where
good work.
We just got rid of our person who was not allowing scientists to talk to the public about climate change. And when I go and I talk to people, you guys didn't hear about that down there?
Oh yes.
Oh yes.
Okay, I never know what hear about Canada, but the feedback I keep getting back from teachers is we give them so much that they can't actually read through. But that could just be a problem.
If you look at the learning pathways work that we did, I think that in essence the same thing was true with this government report. There was just a lot of information. It was a little hard to find your way through. So we built these learning pathways. So you might look at that as an analog to some of your work. And we found it useful as a way to solve the problem with not a lot of work. You may find the same strategy would work for your scientific reports. Using similar resources, you know, the carbon cycle is the carbon cycle. There's not a government, U.S. version of the carbon cycle versus Canadian. I think that, you know, the strategy we used might be valuable to other countries.
Oh, I agree. I think it would be.
Okay, are there any more comments or questions? Well, Emily, thank you very much for your presentation today. It's sort of given us all more to think about in terms of the National Climate Assessment and moving forward and how we can use it in education. Okay, we'll have another conversation next week. Thank you very much,
Thanks,
everybody.
Thanks, Emily.
Thank you, everyone.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye.
Thank you.